All right, hello everyone, and welcome to the Table of the Unknowing Minds podcast. My name is Matt Eshe. I'm the head cross country coach, associate head track and field coach at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, UAB. Love to welcome everybody. We got our panel pulling their chairs up to the table right now. Want to let everyone know this is a meeting that many of us have had over the past few weeks. We thought that some of the ideas, concepts, things that we're dealing with in real life are ideas that you guys in the coaching world are also dealing with. So we've got a tremendous panel here of Division I coaches, accomplished Division I coaches from Power 5, Group of 5, and Independents all gathered here today. So as I said, we're looking at some real world issues that affect us, not only from a family life, but from the in the sports of cross country and track and field that we love, and how are we dealing with those kind of things. So without further ado, I'm going to start with the first member on my left here, Darren Flowers. He's the director at the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley. How we doing, Darren?
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me, man. Glad to be a part of this.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We've got John Bell, the director of track and field and cross country at St. Louis University out of the A-10. John, how we doing?
Doing well, Matt. Thanks for putting this together. Excited to be here.
Appreciate it, John. We've got... gentleman, actually, I ran with in college for a couple of years. A lot to him, Scott Williamson. He's the jumps multis coach at the University of Nevada, Reno. The associate head track and field coach at Nevada. Scott, how we doing?
Doing well. Thanks for putting this together. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. We've got from Indiana University, relaxing as always, the jumps multis coach extraordinary, Mike Erb.
Right, looking forward to some continued good conversation here.
I love it. We've got probably the most interesting man in the world, actually, Mr. Mike Nelson, the director of cross country and track and field at Monmouth University. He's always got something going on. Mike, how we doing?
I'm good.
And last but definitely not least, a guy that shares some high school Classic 8 ties with me. Mr. Tom Sage out of Virginia Commonwealth VCU, the jumps multis coach, if I am not mistaken, Tom.
Correct. Thanks for having me, Matt.
But guys, we just got off of a weekend. I know that's special to a lot of us. How's everybody's Father's Day going on? I know mine was kind of relaxed. My parents came in and got in about 6 o'clock that night, got a nice little present from my 19-month-old son, got his handprint on baseball. Guys know I love baseball. So, I mean, that was good. How are you guys' Father's Days?
Well, I mean, considering, most everything is shutting down back in Texas, we stayed outside, man. I went out to one of the state parks out here, and we hiked for a little bit and got some fresh air, man. The kids are getting stir crazy.
We spent the weekend at a baseball tournament. So we did some great social distancing at a 12U baseball tournament. Let me tell you, there's nothing more exciting than 12U baseball.
How'd it go?
We advanced to the semifinal round of the tournament. So it actually went pretty well, but it was a hot, miserable Missouri summer weekend. So, but all in all, it was good time with the kids.
Mike, you guys are always somewhere. Nelson, you guys are always somewhere doing something, but you never know what's going on with you guys. What'd you guys do for Father's Day?
We were beating the beat, man. Jersey Shore. Beating the beat.
We were waiting for you that one. That was that one in the chamber ready to go.
That's been up here for years.
Yeah.
No, we were on the Jersey Shore, spent about 4 hours at the beach, Sandy Hook recreation beach area. It's a beautiful beach. You can see the Manhattan skyline. Really, really cool area here in Jersey. So it was a good weekend.
That's awesome. That's great.
Well, no little ones running around the house. I'm not for sure if I left the couch that day. So I did get caught up on all my TV shows.
It's a good day. Brilliant. It's brilliant.
I hear you, Scott. Okay. I called my dad. That was about, I'm probably the oldest of all you guys. And here I am with just calling my dad. So it was a pretty easy day for me.
Same. I in the spirit of my dad, I was doing some yard work. So.
Oh, there you go, Max.
I did the same. Yep. I did the same.
Building anything or just kind of took care of the yard?
Oh, just filling in spots, moving trees, all that, fun stuff.
All the stuff that all the coaches are really mastering at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
I've really enjoyed
domestication.
I really got to the point where I look forward to going now and working in my garden.
I don't know if you guys are the same, but I love mowing my lawn. Like, it takes me 45 minutes or so. Granted, I don't have any kids, so, you know, I got time to spare, but I love mowing my lawn.
You got a push mower or you got a rider?
Push mower. Exercise.
Good way to do it, right?
Do you love yelling at people to get off your lawn?
Not yet. My two little ones are animals and, you know, can't keep them off the lawn.
Get off my lawn.
It'll happen.
it's funny how quickly we go from, like, you know, like thinking about what where you were in college and the things you were interested in, and now you're like looking up gardening tips on on Google. It's amazing how quickly things change.
It's amazing going to Lowe's. I've been to Lowe's way more than, you know, my father-in-law comes in. We go to Lowe's and probably three times a day, because we go for a project. Last time we rebuilt, we did a whole bathroom downstairs, took out everything. And I think we went three times a day when he was here. So 15, 20 times, and no joke on that one. And now all of a sudden, like, I'm going back to Lowe's. I know where everything is, but I cannot stand the lines. You go to the government center and those lines are going to take you a half hour to get through.
It's kind of crazy. You're exactly right. Thinking of, you know, what we were doing in college, I never would have thought of, you know, doing all the little, you know, handyman projects around the house. And now it's like, I'm always YouTubing how to lay tile or how to build something. Or it's like, what just happened?
YouTube University, man.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. If it wasn't for YouTube, I don't think I would have been able to do any of the
projects. I know we've all become handymen.
I poured concrete, laid concrete, redid my bricks on my front porch and everything, did a drain. I'm like, how in the world did I figure out how to do this? I'm crazy.
That's your backup plan.
Yeah, if this whole thing doesn't work out because of COVID, we'll do that. So
that's your backup plan.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that. I'll probably get fired right away. How are you guys, COVID is something and doing things that we're not used to are something that I think is affecting all of us, but every day it seems like there's a new rule coming out, there's new restrictions coming out. But how are you guys dealing with COVID? How's that kind of hitting your teams?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I think everyone's kind of in the same boat. I mean, initially, I mean, to be quite honest, for me, it was nice to kind of get some perspective, take a step back, you know, look at everything. And I know addressing my team, this was one of those learning moments where you can say, you know, there's bigger things than athletics and in life, and this is a moment where you need to be paying attention and make sure your priorities are straight. And really, you know, I think initially that was really my emphasis and still is, but you know, as we look ahead and you see that this virus is not really going away, obviously, that presents more challenges. So you know, how do we move forward? I think there's just a lot of unknowns, man. I'm really just trying to roll with the punches and you know, just trying to be as understanding as I can with the kids and just trying to keep perspective.
It's been interesting the past couple of weeks, with a lot of stuff going on too, where, you know, typically our conversations with kids revolve solely around track and field and technical things and getting better and those sorts of, you know, everyday things that we're tasked with. But I've had a few conversations now in the past couple of weeks with some kids that honestly, you know, just been making phone calls and just checking in on people and seeing how they're doing. And we get away from the track stuff. And what I find out are some of these guys and women that maybe I've spoken with in 2 or 3 minute, you know, intervals with over the past couple of years are actually, you know, really interesting and really have a lot of things to say and are really involved in a lot of cool stuff that's outside of the track and field world. And I've had hour-long conversations with kids that I might not have had an hour total of conversation with them in a year or two. And, you know, so, and it had nothing really to do with track and field, but just about other life things or cultural things or societal things that are going on. And I don't know, to me, that's been fairly interesting. I enjoy that part. I always thought that I took some time to get to know kids that way, and maybe I didn't do it as well as I thought I did. And so it's been, and I really think that in the long run, that's something that, you know, the better we know people, separate from athletes, the better we're able to actually help them in, you know, their athletic pursuits and whatnot as well. So that's been kind of something that's been really interesting and an opportunity that we've had, you know, that we wouldn't have ordinarily had.
You know, one of the things I found very interesting about my group is we're very type A, have to have everything planned, time schedules, have answers to everything. And just the maturing process that I've seen my group go through over the past, 10 weeks or so, 12 weeks, however long it's been, has been kind of remarkable. And I don't think this has been a great teaching tool for them to be able to understand that there are things that are out of their control and they have to roll with the punches a little bit and just kind of mature and kind of go about their day with some unknowns and that they're going to be okay with that. I think it's a great, in some regards, it's a great life lesson for them. So it's definitely had some positive outcomes. I mean, there's obviously a lot of negatives, but I'm really impressed with how much my team's matured over the course of the last few months.
I think that's something that we're all looking at. We're all looking at it, trying to make a positive out of a negative. And, for my group specifically, we're slowly kind of figuring out how we're getting back into school and what we're going to get back, the phases that we're coming back. I think we're coming back 10 at a time. But I would agree with all you guys, we're trying to change this from a negative experience to definitely a positive or at least a learning experience. And that's kind of been the message that we have, especially with Corona and then, with this whole movement that's been going on as well. I think it's a great opportunity for us as coaches to learn and for athletes to be heard.
You guys all, hit the head on so many different points and stuff. And it's, one of the things that kind of stood out to me was just how resilient our kids are. They are in the middle of a semester and then they kind of get yanked from their classes and, get thrown into this online learning and, to see how they all adjusted and, hopefully the courses were still pretty challenging, but I don't know about your guys' squads, but our kids killed it in the classroom this semester. And it was pretty amazing to see, a lot of kids that, probably struggle with, online learning and they need that a little bit more of that structure and, how they kind of made that adjustment and persevered was pretty remarkable. And, kind of like Mike said, I think, this last few months, it's been a great opportunity to talk to the kids a little bit more about just who they are and what they want to do and not so much about the X's and O's and training and track and field. And that's probably the highlight that I've probably enjoyed the most out of this time is, getting to know the kids on a different level. So I know we still got a lot of challenges. It seems like we were kind of coming out of the woods a little bit, but it looks like we might be kind of heading back down that road. So hopefully we're not, but we'll see what happens.
You guys are right. We had an opportunity this past weekend. I assume some of you guys are probably doing Zoom calls and excuse me. Actually, I know some of you guys are doing Zoom calls once a week, once every couple of weeks with your team. And we do one every 2 weeks. And we had a gentleman on this weekend talking about, what they're doing with their team and some other issues that we're dealing with, especially everything that's been going on. And the coach just talked about the fact of being organic. I think, you guys hit about it, Herbie, you hit on it, where you spend a couple hours with each kid, hours with kids you've never talked to more than 20 minutes sometimes, not because you don't want to, but because sometimes you just don't have that time. And how those conversations become so organic that it does help us with a whole new perspective. We had COVID started and everything got shut down. We did some time trials and we didn't do time trials like, go run 1500 meters and see what you do. It was a distance time trial and the kids have been away for school for 6 weeks. And it was amazing how many kids, let's call it middle of the road, were all of a sudden running with your top kids in those distances were running fast. And I was like, it's amazing how, when you strip everything down and simplify it, how the kids themselves have absolutely taken off. That's been incredible. You're right. The conversations we've had have been something special. Well, I mean, we all have different rules. I mean, we just saw that the worst thing about right now is those are some huge positives, but the worst is the, NCAA just came out yesterday Everybody saw this, I assume, with the new dead period.
The recruiting. Yeah, recruiting piece.
Yeah, it's August 31st. Did anybody else see the other legislation that just came out? I think this will affect cross a little bit more than us or than track, but that you can actually now start, you can, in the first date of competition, you can actually use the first countable date of competition to bring your teams back. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
I hadn't seen that.
So I just, again, our compliance guy just sent it over to us, and he said, I can read it if I can pull it up here. But essentially, so we're supposed to start September 5th for our first competition. Count the days back, you know, to bring your team back from the competition. Now you're allowed to, I've got it right here. The NCAA approved a waiver in the fall sports other than football to allow the start date for preseason practice to be calculated from the date when the first permissible contest may occur rather than the date of the first scheduled contest. This waiver provides flexibility and certainty despite the possibility of schedules being modified due to COVID-19.
So that's assuming or given some room for if it's a month till you can actually have a competition. Is that kind of the thought there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. I would
assume. What I find interesting too is when I saw that date, August 31, well, you know, for cross country, the first date of competition, essentially September 1. You know, so then you're sitting here thinking, okay, well, if we can't bring recruits on campus, we can't travel to recruit, do all these things, how is it really feasible or possible to travel with kids and compete on September 1? To me, I was just like, man, that's a really conflicting idea, you know, like, and that's something I'm struggling with right now, you know, like bringing kids back to campus when you see all this stuff going on. And, you know, I think we have a lot of tough decisions ahead and shoot, those decisions will probably be made for us. But, you know, just the battle with, hey, you know, I'm overseeing and taking care of these kids. This is someone's kid, bringing them back to campus for athletics. What does athletics look like in the fall? I think it's a struggle that all coaches at all levels and all sports are going through right now. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you guys maybe you'll speak to some of it.
Yeah, we talked briefly kind of when they, you know, well, in our staff meeting, we talked about it before it came out yesterday, but when they came out with the new dead period and stuff, we'd kind of brought it up. It's like, well, you know, do we take the stance from a program that we're not going to have official visits this year? You know, the idea of, you know, we've had to quarantine, we're being tested and, you know, hopefully we're all, you know, safe and COVID free. But then the idea of, you know, we're going to, you know, bring a family and a recruit in and they're going to travel possibly through the airports and everything. And then, you know, kind of be around our team and stuff. Is that a risk that we want to take? You know, that's something we're kind of kicking around right now.
It does bring up a good point. I mean, we just, we found out from the girls in the dorms that are living in the dorms next year, at least the whole student body population got it. And then we found out secondhand, but we are not allowed to have the kids in the dorms are not allowed to have any visitors this fall. Doesn't matter who it is, but no visitors, no nothing, which means, you know, what I love to do, and I don't know about you guys, you can speak to this. We love to have kids stay with the, you know, your recruit stays with the kids in the dorms. Just why wouldn't you? Now we can't. So Scott, you bring up a good point. Is it worth the visit? Are we going to be able to put them in the hotels? Are you going to have enough hotel rooms? What are we going to be able to go that way?
I just don't know how you're going to be able to control that environment, you know? And when they talk about like kids not visiting with other kids, man, they're 20, they're 19. Like it's going to happen. I think that's the real unsettling part of all this.
Well, and kind of going back to what Scott was saying earlier about academics, I think one of the things that was shown, you know, with online, we had kids that were forced to go home and spend time with mom and dad and did really well in the academics online. But kind of going what Darren was saying, like they're 20-year-olds, they're going to be social. And maybe that was one of the reasons why their academics suffered when they were on campus. But the challenge is going to be when we bring them back to campus, and I'm sure each one of you guys have a different policy kind of put down from your athletic departments. When we bring them back to campus, what is that going to look like? You know, can we feasibly keep them in the dorms without visitors? You know, what does official visits look like if you're having them at all? Like, these are great questions.
You know, you have all these, you know, 18, 19 year old first time away from home. I mean, we see it every year and we've been seeing it for years. There's just no, I don't see how it's possible you're going to keep them from, you know, going out to, you know, spend time with, you know, their friends and socialize and have parties and everything like that. I just don't know how it's even going to be possible.
Well, and you've got the general population of the student body that they don't have the same priorities as your athletes, student athletes. So, you know, I mean, you've got that interaction even in-person classes, sure. You know, and it's just human nature.
They won't have the same testing as we will either. And I don't know if that's going to look any different for you guys, but I can tell you, at least as far as I know right now, they're obviously being pretty rigorous with our athletes coming back. And we were fortunate to have a couple kids that football and basketball that tested positive for antibodies, but didn't have any actual cases, which was pretty, I'm kind of almost questioned those numbers. That's pretty shocking, but it's great. But I don't think everybody else is doing that, you know? And I think if you take this one more step to really kind of look at the big picture, these kids are getting maybe better grades when they're doing their stuff online. Maybe we're doing a really good job with this online teaching stuff. So then what does that mean? So now how, and this might be a delicate subject for all of us, right? But like now you got to resell an entire population of families and young people on the idea that it's actually worth their huge amount of money to come to school to take classes that they could be doing online for next to nothing. And all the infrastructure and the dorms and the classrooms and all that kind of stuff are great. And the social aspect's fun. And certainly there's some development there. But what happens when that online stuff goes so well, everybody learns the same. And they're like, wait a minute, why am I paying an extra $20,000 or $30,000 a year for something I could get for way cheaper? You know, and that's a huge, huge question. And there's a lot you could probably go on off of that. But that's something I had been thinking about, you know, just with the way things look like they maybe, you know, assuming
that's I think that's a great point, Mike. And I think that's a point for higher education to consider, school presidents.
That's above our pay grade. I understand that. Yeah.
But it does affect us.
It does. But I guess the saving grace for all of us is that we're not esports. So we actually have to be in person to do our sports. So that's the saving grace for us, but no, it does beg a serious question for school presidents. What are we doing? Or why are we paying so much to go to school? And it's if we can cut our costs and get the same education.
But I think we got to talk about what is education too, right? And I personally think that we play a role, a different role in education where it comes to the complete package, you know, developing the complete person, which I think takes them further than just just the books. And to me, this is really a defining moment for college athletics because we get to really say what we're about, right? You know, and I think we've known for a few years what athletics is about, you know, and where it's headed, just as far as it being a huge, huge money machine. Of course, in the track and field world, that's not the case. And so I think it's really telling all of this has pushed us 5 to 10 years forward. And now we have to really, really say what college athletics is about. And you're seeing cross country programs get cut. You're seeing track programs get cut. A lot of the non-rev sports get cut. And to me, that's disappointing because what are we about? You know, are we about the student athlete experience where 95% of these kids aren't going to do sports beyond college? You know? And it's part of education. It's a huge part of their education. And I think that, you know, I think as we've talked in previous discussions, like that's the thing that we've got to sell and where our value is.
You know, I coached. Go ahead.
No, Mike, go ahead. Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say, I don't know about anybody else, but I spent a lot of time in the Division III world where obviously there was no revenue really at all. And what you saw in those types of models where there were different programs that had very different philosophies when it came to what athletics, the role that they played in the whole overall culture of the school, right? So like there'd be, I mean, without mentioning specific places, there were some that would look at athletics as, you know, a glorified at best intramural program where it was just some people going out having fun and doing whatever. And then there were some programs that really valued, I was fortunate to be in an institution that really valued exactly what you were saying, Darren, about the role that it plays in the overall educational and development, you know, piece. And so out from our president all the way down, there was a huge value placed on the role that athletics played, not only on the student athletes, but also on the general population and the culture of the school, where, you know, you could just point to like a, what was it? I'll screw up the stats. It was Butler who, you know what I mean? They make a Final Four, a national championship game of basketball, and all of a sudden their applications go up by like 50%, you know? So, you know, there certainly are quantifiable factors there, but there's also just the cultural factors that are a little less quantifiable, that maybe that's something that we ought to be, you know, promoting more given this current, you know, way things are going.
I think that's a positive for track and field, what you're talking about, Mike. Because I do feel like track and field, it does things the right way and is developing people. And so we'll see. We'll see where that goes down the road.
And the reach of our students, you know, the type of students, both men, women, racial minorities, all across the spectrum, we are able to have a much larger impact than a lot of sports in a lot of different ways. And so there is a, you know, an inherent value to our sport specifically. But again, just the bigger picture, athletics as a whole provides so many opportunities for kids who otherwise would not be going to college, would not be having that higher education experience. And so, you know, as much as you know, athletics can drive revenue at certain institutions, whether it be TV contracts, or NCAA basketball tournaments, or tuition dollars for the, you know, the non-revenue sports, you know, there is this other on the backside of it, the bigger piece of opportunity that we are providing for just a massive amount of young people throughout this country. So it is incredibly important.
Well, I kind of look at it a little differently. I mean, there's definitely a large percentage of athletes at out there, but when you look at them in terms of like an institution, we're right around 22,000 students on our campus, and about less than 500 athletes. You know, so when we're talking about like, you know, the format of what a university is going to look like in maybe 5 to 10 years, you know, what is the general student that's going to a college? What are they looking for? You know, are they wanting to be, you know, I mean, why are they spending an extra $15,000 in, you know, dorms and board and fees and you know, everything else that goes apart with living on campus, you know, versus, you know, staying at home and getting their education that at the end of the day, it's going to be, you know, say the same degree, you know, and is, you know, as important as athletics is to us, it's like, it's kind of a small portion of the larger university.
Well, I'd agree with you there, Scott. I mean, like you got to look at this too, is how are families affected by all this, you know, financially, economically, you know, I mean, those decisions might be forced at some point where, hey, like, you know, so-and-so got laid off. We can't afford to go to university A, B, C. You know, this is the option that we have to choose. And I think, you know, I think that might be some of the fallout from some of this. You're already seeing it with, you know, even with the high school situation with, you know, I feel really sorry for these seniors coming up. Like, you know, who knows what their senior year is going to look like, what recruiting is going to look like, what opportunities are going to look like for them. But, you know, if kids are forced to stay home 3 to 4 days a week and be at home, be educated at home, what does that look like for the parent? Right. So what does that look like for the parent and their balance with a job and educating their kid? Like there's so many complex issues here that actually affect us and universities. And I think those are some of the things that I look at and I'm like, man, this is going to be tough. This is a sticky situation we're in here.
Oh, I can't imagine, you know, if we go this fall and all of a sudden classes go online and stuff, just the mental health of, you know, the students of, you know, who are so used to being very social and they've made it through this, you know, couple months and they're looking forward to, you know, getting back to campus and, you know, seeing their friends and interacting with people. And, you know, it's going to be really tough for a lot of a lot of kids, and the long-term effects of, you know, being like a, you know, an online student and never getting that, you know, social aspect and, you know, kind of how you interact with people. I mean, it's, there's a lot of complicated issues that could be, you know, long-term issues.
I like that you bring that up, because that refutes my point from earlier in a very good way that helps us, you know what I mean? And that, you know, what does the mental health look like when you're sitting behind a computer getting your education for 4 years, as opposed to actually being in a social environment, right? And I think you just made a great case for the fact that that could be pretty detrimental as well, and really emphasize the importance of the social aspect, which I happen to believe in a lot, just kind of like to look at the big picture sometimes. You know, I think that it's super important that people are on campus and have to look people in the eye and shake hands and figure out how to live with somebody that they've never met before in their entire life. That's super valuable, you know, and there are some people that can get by without having those things and still achieve what it is that they want to achieve. But I think for the most part, probably one of the reasons why the model's worked for so long is because it does work, you know what I mean? For that does, but you know, the most good for the most people. And so hopefully that continues.
No, I think on the flip side of that, I was just gonna say on the flip side of that, like, you know, this, there's ripple effects everywhere, and you know, you're talking about the parents staying at home. Well, what if you have young children? You know, what does that look like? Are you teaching them? You know, are they going to school 5 days a week, or maybe are they getting a little bit more opportunity to play? Maybe they're at home having less organized school time and more play time, and maybe that's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, I don't think.
I'll tell you, I mean, having little kids at home and trying to do your job is virtually impossible. This has been one of the most stressful times by far of my life. And my wife is just totally overboard in terms of stress. You can just see it in the kids' eyes when recently they've gotten to spend some time with other youngsters, and they just light up, and they just crave that social interaction and all the things that kids do together. And man, you know.
Yeah, I think I'm worried about more of the long-term effects for the parents and adults.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good for either party. You know, it's one of those situations where it's like, well, I mean, we have to do what we have to. We have no choice. You know, we've got to take care of our kids, and we have to take care of our own health. But man, this is not ideal. It's not ideal for any party. It's not ideal for the employer, because I think you're doing less quality work. So, you know, I think New Jersey maybe today is coming out with sort of what the plan is for the fall in terms of high schools, and just K-12 education is coming out with the plan today. And man, if it's like, well, second grade, you know, goes Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and third grade does this, and it's like, man, that's not taken into consideration, you know, working parents whatsoever. But I mean, we got to do what we got to do, so we'll find a way to deal with it. But man, it's been a tough go.
You know, what's that? I heard the saying, you know, I don't have a favorite kid, but there's one I'd rather not wake up in the morning.
that's a good one. But you know, Mike, you just hit on a fascinating point, though. You know, obviously, I think when you have little kids, it would be very, very challenging to get quality work done. You know, obviously, my stepkids are older; they're 12 and 14, and so they're a little bit more independent and you know, able to kind of manage a little bit more on their own. And so, what I've found is my quality of work has actually gotten better in this, and my quality of life, I actually feel now, again, it would be different obviously if I had practice every day and was physically at the track, but the administrative piece of my job has actually gotten a lot better over the course of this time, just because I feel like my work-life balance has actually improved because I'm home more, and my family life has actually improved, you know, quite drastically because of this. So again, it's getting back to the very original question of kind of how we're dealing with this, and you're trying to take a negative situation and turn it into a positive. You know, there's definitely both sides of the coin that you can see and come from different viewpoints and different perspectives. But I do think there's a lot of, I would guess there's a lot of coaches that their home life is vastly improved because of this. So it's just, again, very fascinating time to be in our profession.
Well, and this is an event that's going to change the landscape of what we do, I think, for a long, long time.
It's amazing. It's also an inflection point. Like, you know, we've talked about this in the past. Like, what does the packaging for track and field look like? You know, what are we currently putting out as our product? Like, right now we're not putting out anything, but what can we put out? You know, what could this look like? Everything's going to change after this in pretty much every facet of life. Why can't we change as well?
I think that's a great point. And I think it kind of opens up the door as to, you know, maybe we need to start thinking about, you know, this virus is with us for a while or, you know, forever. And, you know, what does a new track meet look like? I mean, you know, it's outdoors. We got 21 events. Maybe that's kind of going out the window. Maybe we're, you know, a track meet now is 3 or 4 events, or, I mean, it's, you know, there's so many different, you know, scenarios out there, but, you know, we it's probably not too soon to start thinking about, you know, some of those situations.
No, it's amazing. Some schools I would think are, I got to wonder if a school, and, you know, Darren, you face these guys, Grand Canyon University. The reason I bring them up is because maybe they do have a good model going. They've got, I think 101,000 students in their population.
That's a ton.
Yep, but of the 101,000 that are paying, I think, $22,000 or so, $25,000 roughly to go to school, 80,000 are online.
A ton of them online.
Yep, 80,000 are online, and 20,000 are actually physically on campus. So even if they lose another 10,000 to whatever, the school is still going to be fine. You're still going to be able to fund athletics. You're still going to be able to fund a lot of research, and I don't know much about Grand Canyon, so I can't speak to them at all, but I don't think you're going to lose a lot of that kind of stuff in that.
They're kind of ahead of the curve, honestly. They have like a bit of a hybrid model before all this happened, so they can make that transition a bit easier. And they're already bringing in, like, you know, tons of money, like you said, because of, they were publicly traded for a while, but I think they've gone back and, but still, I mean, they've got all this revenue from, you know, enrollment. And so, I mean, their budget compared to ours, I think, is double in athletics, you know, with this, about the same amount of sports. So it's, you're right. You're right. That's an interesting model to look at for the future.
Got to think that some of the small schools to survive are going to be going, looking at this option, going, this is a great option if we can get some people to do it. But athletics will always have to be on campus. There's no questions about that. You can do, I mean, I know we've got a few teams here that do their situations. I think golf is one of them because of having to be out at a course for a long time. A lot of them have a couple classes on campus and the rest are offline. If I'm not mistaken, some of the kids aren't even on campus, not because they don't want to be, but they're all online classes. So they can just spend the day at the golf course, which doesn't sound too terrible right now, but depending on your social restrictions, I don't know who can and cannot do that.
Well, I think we're going to end up falling somewhere in between, you know, where we were and then where we immediately went when everything shut down. I think I don't see how else we function, at least until there's a vaccine and there's more clarity moving forward. I think we're going to fall somewhere in between for a while, which, like John said, you know, may not be a bad thing as far as work-life balance, because I know as track coaches, I know a lot of track coaches, and man, things are pretty out of balance. Like, you're on the road, you're recruiting all year round, and it's very easy to get burnt out. And, you know, this may be a little bit of a blessing in disguise to kind of help us, you know, step back a little bit.
Yeah. So what do you do with the program itself? We've seen in previous conversations, we've seen this. Tom, you guys at VCU did a tremendous job with your Spark profile right there, your Spark document. Let's call it a document here. And I think that thing is brilliant. I really do. But, you know, we talk about still being relevant. How do we keep kids coming to campus and visits on stuff? Like, what else can you do? Because you've got Twitter accounts and Instagram accounts to make things. There's only so many TikTok videos. I actually don't know how to use
TikTok. You're on TikTok-ish, yeah.
You into TikTok, Matt?
Oh, Matt's got a secret life.
I'll get my 7-year-old. She's into TikTok.
Actually, social media coordinator right there is your 7-year-old. They can do all the TikTok videos for you.
That's cool. Yeah, you guys have something to talk about.
But, you know, what are ways we can actually keep our sport relevant? Because, I mean, we see stuff coming out, programs getting cut. We see stuff with programs. This is how much money everybody's spending. And we're all sitting there going, well, shit, we got to stay relevant somehow.
Well, I think it's important to, you know, what do we bring to the table? You know, I mean, I think, you know, obviously for women's track and field, there's no other sport that, you know, can bring that many athletes, you know, to a department, you know? So, I mean, that's gotta be, you know, one of the huge things, you know, diversity has gotta be huge. You know, when you look at across, you know, our sport versus others, you know, we're huge, you know, in diversity. But we do struggle in a lot of aspects. We're not appealing. People don't understand us. You know, go into a track meet or there's nothing worse than, you know, we go out to dinner after a track meet and, you know, people come up to us and ask, hey, did you guys win? And it's like, well, they didn't really keep score, you know? So, I mean, figuring out how to become more relevant is it's a challenge.
Yeah, man, this is out here. And I know Mike spoke to it at one point on one of these conversations. And man, I just like, I love the idea, and this sounds just far out in left field, of having like 15 athletes, you know, a few that are very diverse, having a small set of events and going and make them like warrior events, you know, like why in the javelin don't we have targets out there? You know, like
that would be so much more fun.
And you can, you know what I'm saying? Like you can light the jab on fire and throw it, like make it a warrior's event. Like I, you know, you look at when they did the 40-yard dash and they televised it, and Marquise Goodwin was like the fastest man in football or whatever it was. I don't remember what they did, but they had a ton of viewers. And I mean, they, you know, they spiced it up. They made it viewer friendly. It wasn't that long. And in my opinion, that sounds like a lot of fun. And I think it's more relatable to the common viewer.
And yeah, I mean, I've had conversations with some of you guys in the past, and you know, Netflix had that cheer documentary. I don't know if any of you guys watched it, but I mean, shoot, that took the world by storm. You know, a Netflix cheer documentary. We can't figure out how to produce something that's interesting with all the personalities we have in track and field.
Wow.
We can do better. We can do
my
better.
Question to that. I agree with you, Tom. I think that that's a great idea. My question is, so what does the cheerleading world look like now versus before something like that happens? Right. So I guess, you know, my question is, what is that overall effect of something like that, where you could take one program, or, I mean, you know, Last Chance used a fascinating, just a great documentary. Right. But we're all, I mean, everybody's into football already, but, you know, you can only involve so many people in that. So once the dust settles from a one-off kind of niche documentary like that, how does that, what's the ripple effect from that? And what are people going to cheer competitions now that weren't before? You know what I mean? Sure. Are they going to have at their national, whatever they do, are they going to have double the attendance and, you know, they get in TV time, you know? So I just wonder when you get into that, which is a great idea, but what's the lasting effect? And does that really, you know, is it a lack of exposure, which it very well may be, or is it a lack of, like Dara would say, you know what I mean? It's just not exciting. So, you know what I mean? Is it, if people saw it, would they be into it, or does it need to look different? And I guess that would be a question that I pose to the field here.
Right. Yeah. And I think just in general, like you're going to learn through experience. You're going to learn through trial and error a little bit. Like if we put something more compelling out than what we currently have, yeah, we're going to find out what viewers want to see and what they don't, you know? Like, it's the same kind of concepts that social media uses. Like, you see things that are interesting to you, you know? So if you get some of that feedback from just trying anything different, and I think maybe they tried that a few years back with some of that American Track League or whatever that was called. Some of those things I think were interesting, and others felt a little forced. But as you kind of continue down that path, you're going to figure out maybe what a product should look like.
Yeah, there has to be.
I mean, it's interesting. Oh, God.
I was going to say, there just needs to be some, you know, some experimentation with the format of track and field. And I think as coaches, we have to be open to change, which historically as a group, I don't think we're the most open group to change. You know, I was listening to a podcast, a different, an ESPN podcast months ago, and it was surrounding the World Series of Poker. And you know, they used to show that on ESPN in the 80s, but they didn't have the table camera. And just that simple change of being able to see what the cards that everybody held revolutionized the way that sport was broadcast. If you want to call it a sport, I mean, playing cards. Before, you didn't know what anybody had. Then once you see what everybody has, it just, you had some inside information and it was just broadcast a little bit differently. So I think, you know, I guess my bigger point is we just have to be open to experimentation and lighting a javelin on fire or putting a target out there. I mean, it sounds like a harebrained, crazy idea, but.
But you got to rise above the noise, right?
Yeah, like, you got to do something different.
There's so much noise and there's so many options. Like, did you guys ever watch, I think there was a race with like, 8 athletes and they did like a 2-mile race or a 3K and they pulled the last person that came through the 400 off the track on every lap.
Yeah. They do this in Europe a bunch. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so entertaining. I mean, it's incredible. It's so fun to watch and it's just kind of a one-off event, but I just feel like we need that kind of thinking to really, really boost us forward. You know,
I think that it has to be, a score has to be kept, and the only way you're going to get the average Joe Schmo, the public, into this sport like they are into other sports, a score has to be kept. There has to be a result. There has to be a consequence of your winning or losing, like there is in every other sport. Every single indoor meet we went to this year, it's just a time trial or a try to PR in your field event. There's no value to it. And so like Scott was saying, hey, how'd you do? Did you win or you lose? You can't even answer that question. Until we can answer that question and there's a value for the meets that we attend every weekend, I don't see why anybody really would care other than if you're the athlete, the coach, or the parent who just ran, jumped, or threw a PR. So you've got to add value to the sport. And the only way you add value is to keep score. Somebody's a winner. Somebody's a loser that day. And something, these meets count for something, it builds towards something, and there's a goal there's something at the end to qualify for or aim for. In track and field, one of the things I've thought about in collegiate track and field is, you know, if meets were scored and it wasn't just invitational showing up and whoever does, you know, whatever, you had to perform at a certain level to make it, to even get to your conference championship as a team, you know, but if you didn't do well throughout the regular season, you couldn't even go to the conference championship. So there's a value in the regular season, man, for like 90% of the schools and the athletes out there, there's even no value in the regular season other than the one meet at the end, the conference meet, where that's the meet that the administration cares about, the coaches care about. Everything else is just basically glorified practice. That's all it is.
I agree with that, Mike, but unfortunately in a time of COVID budget restrictions, you know, the reason some of these other sports can create value during the regular season, especially geared towards a conference championship, is there's a conference regular season where they all play each other and they're able to seed one another and kind of have an evaluation over the course of the regular season. We can't do that in track and field because our budgets, for the most part, don't allow us to have interconference competitions to kind of create that qualifying mechanism, so to speak, for our championship.
But maybe if we had to.
Yeah, like, you know, what if you had to do two meets? Two A-10 meets,
I'd be great.
Four teams,
I think that would be that would be fantastic and it'd be wonderful. But I just, again, in today's climate, who's paying for that? It's a chicken or the egg argument. Like, which comes first, right? Like,
I mean, they pay for soccer, they pay for tennis, they pay for golf or whatever.
They do.
So we say it can't happen, but they do it for other sports, you know.
Because if it has implications for postseason, then I would think that, they'd have to front the money. I mean, they'd have to.
Also, you know what, John? You'd maybe have a home meet So you wouldn't, you know, they'd be coming to you sometimes. Yeah. You can't always be forced
I
to
just,
go
I,
there.
You know, I've been trying to get VCU to come to our home meets, but they just don't want to pay me.
where are you guys?
There's an analogy here, and I'm just kind of thinking of this, maybe flesh it out and see what you guys think. But I watched last night the season finale of a show called Lego Masters, which is a competition. If you've seen it, it's pretty interesting, and it's a competition of full-grown people that are given challenges to build certain Lego structures or whatever, and then there's a winner and a loser at the end, and people get sent home. And what I would think, though, I wouldn't have any interest whatsoever in watching some dude sitting down and putting something together Lego-wise. Like, that would not interest me for one second at all. I don't appreciate it. I don't understand how difficult it is. I've never done it myself. I don't know anything about Legos, right? But when all of a sudden you put this competitive winner and loser thing into there, it becomes a pretty compelling television show to watch, right? So the same thing with track and field. You know, there are very few of us in the world that are going to be able to appreciate. Like, I watch, I sit there with my girlfriend or something like that, and I see a certain long jumper, high jumper, and it's like, it might not even be the winner. It might not even be the best one, but it blows my mind because they did something that was so, and she's looking at it and going, that's the same thing that the last dozen people just did. What the hell's the difference, right? Like, I don't care. Who won? You know, that's interesting. Watching somebody win. I don't care if it's 7 foot, world record at eight feet, or if it's a 7 foot jump. If it was a really compelling competition, then it gets pretty interesting all of a sudden. And people, you don't have to teach anybody how to understand competition and winners and losers, right? I don't think that us trying to come up with something, and this may make sense or not, but trying to come up with something that is aesthetically pleasing to people, that it took us years to get to the point where, I still am working on nuances of certain events and understanding the difference between different technical things and what's really great and what's not, right? But man, if I'm just trying to be concerned with that was further or that was faster or this person crossed the line first or that bar was high, whatever, that can be compelling, right? And that's an easier, the path to making that compelling in my mind is much shorter than making this piece of art that we may see as art interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And that could actually be compelling and something somebody wants to see, which, without going back into it, competitive situations, dual meets, regular season win-loss records, not everybody gets to go everywhere. I am kind of a elitist when it comes to that in track and field. On one hand, it's awesome that it's open and the opportunity's there for everybody. That might also be our downfall. Everybody gets to do this. When I was in high school, every jerk got on the bus. You know what I mean? Everybody got to go. But, there was only 15 kids on the basketball team and there were cuts. Shoot, they don't let everybody on the cheerleading team, for crying out loud, right? But we'll take anybody that has a pulse to show up and we'll put them on the track and you get to compete. So you're going, this is serious? This loser over here gets to, run a mile and they did 8 minutes and the person that won ran 5 minutes. It's like, what are we doing? So, which is great because on one hand, because that kid got to run and that kid gets an opportunity, right? But I don't know if it's good for us as a whole. And at some point, and maybe it's Division I athletics, there comes a point where it's like, here's the deal, man. You get 40 roster spots, cross-cut, period. There's 40. You're going to enter 2 people per event per meet. That's it. There's no more. So if you're, and then it starts I think that then drives, and there's a winner and a loser. That drives some competitive stuff. That drives some interest. That drives recruiting for us where, Houston's not going to get every single sprinter. What's the number? Yeah, that number 6 sprinter might be a Big Ten finalist for me, the one that's in Houston, right? So, but he ain't going to Houston when he knows he's not getting on a bus because they only get 2 people to go to a meet or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So, like, if you do that, that could actually force change through on the back end, whereas we're trying to fix it sort of on the end piece here. If we drive it from the back, then all of a sudden you've got it. Those changes have to happen. There's no option for us. It's that's what we've got to do. And maybe it's something that's more compelling to watch.
I'm on board with that.
It's funny because, I'm sure we all get these emails from parents of a kid and it's like, yeah, they want to join the team. And then they tell you, oh, they're a 6-minute miler or something like that. And it's like, are those parents like doing the same thing if their kid was a basketball player and expecting them to be allowed to be on a, a basketball team or a football team or a soccer team? I mean, we really are the one sport that is for everybody. And I think that probably in the end probably hurts us.
I do think one of the best things that's been done, I mean, we're trying to solve the problem ourselves. We could use help from USA Track and Field with being able to solve these problems. But because it really is no minor leagues, we are the minor leagues for, you know, for track and field. I think one of the best things that's been done before, Iowa did it with their Musco Twilight. I know Illinois did it with their blue and gold, or the blue and orange, excuse me, blue and orange before, where they have like that invite section. And then you've got everybody else in the morning. And I think that's something where we as coaches need to figure out a way to help promote that and then score that. And the difficult thing is going to be, we have to sit down and if all seven of us got together for a meet and say, you know what, we're going to score it, but you have to have, you know, and whatever the entry's got to be, we got to put two athletes per event in there. We have to have two in the 60 or three in the 60, three in the jumps, three in the mile, and then you can score it evenly. If you don't want to put three in, that's your fault, but that's the way you can go about it. So you can develop those kids on the bottom and they just, not in the bottom, excuse me, in the earlier part of the day. But then the afternoon kids are actually trying to put a score up, but it's something where you can cater to everybody. Because as we sometimes we forget, and we know this, we're helping revenue for the athletic department, but the school as well, in a completely different capacity that sometimes isn't seen. You know, we do have home meets. We do host things that people can bring in. So if we can change a meet like that, I think it could be really exciting. One thing, Tom mentioned it a little bit, the American Track League. I'm actually working with them a little bit right now and bringing an event to Birmingham. But one of the coolest things I think that they're doing is they are talking with Portland Timbers. They're talking with the Columbus Crew. They're talking with Dallas FC. Vegas is one of them as well. And doing they're doing a pole vault, you know, a street vault. But they're tying it in with like a community mile, where we get some pro athletes, but you also get the community involved. And then, but by tying it in with, let's say, a Portland Timbers game, you're going to have something beforehand, a shot put beforehand. You'll run the mile at the, and again, I don't know exactly how this is working. This is kind of a concept, but put the mile during halftime so everybody can watch it in the stadium or even afterwards. And then the vault starts as things go. Because normally in a soccer match, you can figure out when things finish. And then once they finish, then you're going to have a pole vault outside. So all of a sudden you're bringing track and field in from a elite professional level, which is great. I don't know how well we can do that with a standpoint with event management and those things in the college level. But I think we could make it where you've got three per event, two per event. I'm sorry, that's how it goes. And then the whole bottom thing, it might be a long day for us, but if we don't have a package, we can market. That's the big thing. We don't have anything that we can market. We try to, but again, I don't want to be at the track from 6 a.m. till midnight. I got things to do.
I think the vault community is doing a really good job of putting on the street vaults or the pole vault summit, or, you know, some of the things they're doing. I know a couple of you guys mentioned something about, you know, it's, you know, nobody really cares except the parents, the student athletes and whatever. And it's like, you know, what would our stands look like if we took out all the parents or a friend of those people? It's like, nobody really goes to these competitions, you know, just to, because they're a fan. You know,
we're going to find out at championships when there's no fans allowed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Basketball. We see some of these vaults and things like that. It's like, man, they're packing them. You know, we have the pole vault summit every year here in Reno, and man, they're selling tickets, and they fill up the place.
Well, that's the right concept, in my opinion. You know, you've got how many different sports within our sport, right? And as odd as it seems, like, I think you've got to package those sports tightly, or, you know, package those events tightly. And, you know, I know people were just up in arms about Diamond League cutting certain events and things like that. And I understand for a traditionalist, if you love track and field, but I mean, I do like the idea of a condensed schedule, you know, 2-hour meet where you're scoring the meet. You've got a limited number of entries. It's highly competitive. I think it makes us more relevant, you know?
Well, you know, we kind of talked about this. We're just open to everybody. And it's like, well, what if our concept of the track meet was we let the top 16 people in each event? I mean, how many times do we go to a track meet? I mean, I've been to a lot of track meets where I've watched 2 hours of 200s, you know, and there's, you know, people that are, you know, the indoors, it's like they fill up 2 of the 6 lanes or 3 of the 6 lanes. And it's like, you know, that's a waste. Like, you know, you enter your kids and if they get in the top 16, they get in. And then, you know, you have a set time schedule and it's like, this is what it's going to be. We're going to allow you know, these people in and go from there.
Makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of good stuff right there. A lot of good things. You guys do anything special to help the team, to help promote meets or anything like that? I know we just put a graphic out or anything like that. Graphic out because we host conference cross country championships. You guys working with your SIDs or marketing or anybody along those lines to do that?
Man, they're pulling for anything they can get right now for promoting sports. And I mean, they're, you know, finding out what people do in their off time and highlighting that kind of stuff, man. Any way we can promote our sport right now, they're trying.
Yeah, we're the same way. Everybody's getting their birthday mentioned, and you know, anything we can find. If something cool happens, they're promoting it.
Guys, this is awesome. This is a great conversation right here. I appreciate everybody pulling a chair to the table, talking with us. Look forward to doing this again next week. I think we've got some good stuff going here. So,
well, awesome. expect a proposal to come across the table for lighting the javelin on fire. 2021.
I will vote for it
with targets.
Yeah. With targets, and they're moving.
You know, I know we're about to finish here, but it's like, you know, we have so many great ideas, but it's like, at what point do we ever try to like really kind of move forward with it and get a, you know, promote a proposal to the executive committee and stuff like that? So maybe
episode 10.
You just gotta write it. Write it. We'll review it. We'll probably shoot it down because.
We're gonna say John,
but you know your boss is on that executive committee, so you do have an inside leg.
Hey, I know a couple people, so maybe we can actually, something good can come from this podcast, and we can get some stuff moving in the right direction.
Cool. I love it. We'll get up to the exec committee. All right, guys, thanks for pulling the seat up.
See ya.
Take care.
Thank you.
See ya.